The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Mompos, Bolivar. That's 5 to 6 hours south from Cartagena and Colombia's Caribbean region. And this is episode 344 of the Columbia Calling podcast. A big thank you to all of you out there who have written to our former interviewees or myself regarding the subject of their appearances on the Columbia Calling podcast. I know that Catalina Gil Pinzon has received very, very flattering posts and mail from some of you, of course, talking about peace building in Colombia and the need to change drug policy in this country. And Adrian Alsimer, never one for being left behind, the viper tongue director of Columbia Reports, telling it how it is here in Colombia. And people have written in and wrote tweets to say that this might have been one of the most important Columbia Calling podcast episodes yet. Before that, we had Alexander Barrett of iFinca, and I've heard from Alexander, and he said that 4 or 5 or 6 people have got in touch, and people indeed have got in touch with me about his iFinca app and website. So that's great. You know, the right people are hearing the podcast, and that's you. So thank you again. Today's episode is no less important. This is episode 344, and we're talking to Alvaro Torres, who's in Bogota, and he's the CEO and co-founder of Chiron Life Sciences. And of course, this is a pioneer company in the terms of medical cannabis or medicinal marijuana from Colombia. But it's not just about exportation of the product, but also it's about how to use it at home here in Colombia. So very interesting to hear his story, how he got involved and where the company's going, especially in this period of time in which we live. So I've reached a kind of critical mass here on the Columbia Calling podcast. It's taken a little bit, but people keep coming forward and suggesting other potential guests, and please keep on doing it. We've got loads lined up, but I like to chop and change around subjects and keep it fresh here on the Columbia Calling podcast. And of course, I must thank again journalist Emily Hart for her tireless work in providing the newscast each week. It's been, we've received great feedback on that front. At the same time, I'm going to leave you with Emily right now, and she will give you the breakdown for the news. And then we'll be back and talking to Alvaro Torres, CEO and co-founder of Chiron Life Sciences, for this episode 344 of the Columbia Calling podcast. Don't go away.
I'm Emily Hart, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for the week of September 28th, 2020. Last Monday, tens of thousands took part in nationwide demonstrations against conflict, police brutality, and assassinations of human rights defenders. It was a series of peaceful marches by a broad coalition of groups, including student organizations, labor unions, and indigenous groups. In Bogota, however, the protest was violently ended by police after protesters had reached the central Bolivar Square. A handful of people attacked a unit of the controversial ESMAD riot police. Other cities saw peaceful protests. Amid all of this, Colombia's Supreme Court delivered a ruling which reinforces the right to protest, already enshrined in the Constitution and human rights law, with strong criticism of the treatment of the November 2019 mass social movements. The court ordered the government to reform the national police, and specifically the ESMAD riot police, whose activities and tactics were singled out as a danger to human rights. The court also suspended the use of beanbag rifles, which killed a protester in November and injured at least one last Monday. The Supreme Court also demanded a gag order which would ban public officials from stigmatizing demonstrators. Defense Minister Carlos Holmes Trujillo was ordered to apologize for illegal attempts to violently suppress the protests back in November. He was given 48 hours. This represents a landmark ruling and a positive step for protest in the country, but Trujillo has shown no sign of complying. A vote of no confidence has now been filed against him in the House of Representatives. It has been reported that national authorities uncovered a plan to assassinate Colombia's president, Iván Duque. Details have yet to be disclosed, beyond the fact that the information was leaked by European and US intelligence agencies a fortnight ago. The supposed perpetrators of the planned attack were a Russian man and an Israeli man, both ex-military and experts in the handling of long-range weapons. Duque's security scheme has been reinforced and his agenda modified to reduce risk. At least six people were murdered in a massacre in the Cauca province in the southwest of Colombia on Sunday, the 20th of September. Last Saturday, it was reported that five people had been killed and 40 more kidnapped in Nariño following clashes between armed groups in the indigenous Inda Sabaleta reservation. The Awá community are now fleeing their land in large numbers in fear of further conflict. With more massacres in Chocó and Cundinamarca this week, there have now been 64 massacres in Colombia so far this year, killing more than 250. This is a marked rise from the 2019 figures, raising concerns about the country's security situation. Cities continue to reopen, and new cases of coronavirus continue on a downward trend. Flights have now been reopened to a number of approved destinations with various biosecurity conditions. As well as the United States, flights are now open to and from Mexico, the Dominican Republic, Brazil, Ecuador, Bolivia, and Guatemala. That was the week's newscast. Now back to Columbia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling, the third segment of this episode of the podcast. And my very special guest this week is Alvaro Torres. He's the CEO and co-founder of Chiron Life Sciences. This is a medicinal marijuana cannabis firm out of Colombia. And it's a great pleasure to have him on because there's so much stigma and, well, so many myths around this industry that is growing here in Colombia. And I want to learn more, as I suppose most of you out there do too as well. So welcome on the Columbia Calling podcast, Alvaro.
Thank you, Richard. Nice to be here with you. Thank you so much.
No, you're most welcome. Listen, how is it you get into a business like this? Because this is the first question I have. I mean, I've stalked you on LinkedIn. I can see your past and so on, you know, sort of business guy, and you were in the Atria project there, right down there on the edge of Los Martires, this building.
Yes.
And now you're, you know, the CEO and co-founder of one of the, if not the biggest, medicinal marijuana company in Colombia.
Yes, well, that's the same question that my family asked, Richard. why are you moving from infrastructure to doing marijuana, now medical cannabis? I'll tell you, it was back then, I think it was December 2015. I was, you know, I finished my year doing Atrio. That was designed by Lord Richard Rogers.
Oh, yeah?
By the way. Yeah, yeah. One of the reasons I took the job, my wife is an architect, and I've never worked with such a type of rock star type of artists. So it was amazing to actually be working with him. But I left the company, started doing it on my own. The Colombian government came up with this regulation of medical cannabis. I found it interesting, and my partners and I got together and said, well, why don't we start something here? This is a very early stages, but we don't want to focus on the low-cost production of Colombia. We want to focus on the very large market that we think that it is in the region in Colombia for medical products. So instead of selling the 80 cent a pound coffee, why don't we sell $4 lattes in Latam? And that's, you know, basically the strategy of Chiron. We are focused on the consumer, on the client, not necessarily on that B2B business of exporting cheap extracts. Because, you know, I think, you know, you live in Colombia, you know, that's what we do. We know how to grow bananas, we know how to grow coffee, but we never create value added to these things. Mm-hmm. And then we are subject, you know, like in coffee, I don't know if you know this, but coffee was $3.25 10 years ago. And then, you know, Brazil came in, Vietnam came in, and now it's 90 cents.
Yeah.
So, and then we said, well, maybe why don't we try it? And it started actually taking off. But, you know, it's not that it has a lot to do with engineering, but it is a lot of problem solving all the time. You're building something that, you know, takes a lot of layers, lots of regulation, lots of teams. So, you know, I try to make it analog so that my kids understand why I got into this in the first place after building high-rise towers and now doing a big cannabis company.
So this company, Chiron Life Sciences, how many people then are you employing here in Colombia?
Well, we have, I think, Colombia, roughly about 300 people.
Wow.
We have a couple, you know, more people in Europe and in the rest of Latam. I think we're probably 350 overall. We are pretty large because we have about 150 people in our own clinics.
Mm.
We are vertically integrated, no? So we cultivate and then we sell to the patients in our clinics. Mm. And the clinics, you know, we have 125 people there. So that's why the company is so big. In terms of operations, it's not that many. Most of the people are in the clinics, the hospitals.
I mean, it's such an interesting industry, a new industry. And, you know, we think, you know, I've been here a long time in Colombia. And of course, this last episode or previous episode to on this podcast, I was talking to an international consultant on drug policy, Colombian. And she was saying, you know, we need to change the narrative here in Colombia around drugs. I mean, she's mainly talking about the coca and you know, the cultivation.
Right.
But, of course, you're in Colombia and, you know, everything started at the beginning with the maramberos and everything up on the Sierra Nevada,
yeah.
And you're working in medicinal marijuana, and you have to get past this stigma here in this country, first with your own family, then with your neighbors, and then not only with the government and beyond. This is not an easy industry. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the challenges?
And the banks. Because I still have to keep my accounts open. No, listen, I think one of the also reasons I got into this later when we started developing is because I'm a Colombian. I'm also an American citizen. I went to school in the United States for my undergraduate, let's say 1996 all the way to 2003, came back to Georgetown for my MBA. But when you're Colombian and you were in the mid-90s, early 2000s, right, everything you could hear about Colombia was about the Cali cartel, and now, you know, Netflix has Narcos season 1, 2, and 3, and 4. And so we are surrounded by a negativity of perception of our country.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I'm so altruistic about it, but, you know, I think the fact that we are changing that narrative a little bit in terms of this is medicinal purposes, this is not only outside the country, but even inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the challenges when you start something like that, again, it begins with your family. Then, yes, you start talking to people about, hey, I want to raise capital for this. I want to build a company on medical cannabis. You know, 3 years ago, when I started this with my partners, you couldn't get an interview in the local newspaper if you paid, you know? So I guess being one of the first companies here, we knew a lot of push internally, convincing the banks, convincing the insurance companies, the government, other companies to do business with you. Now everybody's worried about SARLAF and, you know, anti-money laundering and Clinton list and all these things. So it's been tough, but the more that you start proving, you know, because our company, you know, we are publicly trading the Toronto Stock Exchange, and we did it that way so that we can come back to Colombia and say to people, we have to comply with every regulation. We are a Canadian public company. And that started changing the perception of everybody.
Yeah.
When we went public in Toronto, it was the first company in the history of Colombia that's not extraction, mining, or oil and gas that went public in Toronto.
Mm.
Right? So people then start listening, the banks start paying attention, you're following up on all of these. And now, you know, I think, you know, we there's cannabis news every week.
Yeah.
So it's been a long challenge, but, you know, there's more and more acceptance. Even now for us, we have lots of investors in the U.S., lots of investors in Canada. And, you know, and the jokes about Colombian cannabis have been reducing. So I think that's a good sign that we're changing perspective. But you have to also be very open-minded about it. It's, you cannot run a business like this and be offended all the time. But you have to show people that this is not what they think it is, no?
Mm.
This is not Narcos Netflix season 1. And we show that every day, no? And but we still have a long way to go for sure. But, you know, it's taking some time.
Yeah, well, these things take generations. That's the truth of it. I've said it on this podcast many times before. I'm English and I'm still, you know, you go off to somewhere and they say, oh, hooligan. And, you know, It's the same story, but perhaps obviously yeah. on a greater, more damaging scale, obviously for Colombia. And but I mean this industry. So when you started, you said like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, there were just a handful of businesses in this field yes. here, and now the playing field is immense. So you're competing, I guess, against how many?
Well, you know. We are in the business of B2C, so we actually sell end products. So in our particular business, we don't have much competition because it's so difficult to get to where we are. It took us 28 regulatory steps to be able to sell the first medical program, a product to a patient. Even now, I think today, I think we are still probably the only one that's selling high THC and high CBD. If you go down on the bottom of the supply chain and you go, let's say, on cultivation, there's probably 1,000 or more applications for cultivating cannabis, which I guess it also proves the point that, thankfully, we didn't get into this commodity business. But it's also true that not many of these companies are actually able to get to the stage where they can do production of commercial cannabis. I would say there's probably 30 companies that can do commercial cannabis. In terms that they've already have their extraction, all the steps that are needed to be able to sell it. But then going commercial in Colombia and exporting a finished product, that's a very long process. I guess that's what the government of Colombia is now trying to improve. So on the surface, it sounds like a lot of companies, but you know, cannabis is not easy to grow. It's not easy to sell. It's not easy to change perspectives. Exporting, it takes time. Banks do not open accounts for everybody. So, you know, you actually have a smaller playing field when you get to that. But I think the interest is there because, you know, we have all the economic conditions to grow it and the agricultural reasons. So there's a lot more people trying to get into the business, at least on the commodity side.
Well, I would say, you know, that anyone trying to get in now has probably missed that first boat. That's, you know, obviously, as you're saying. And I find it very, very interesting that in that last part of the conversation we were talking about, you said you opened first in the Toronto Stock Exchange. It's like you circumvented the bureaucracy in Colombia to then come back at them with, you know, a different form of legitimacy. Because I think if you tried straight out, you know, in Bolsa de Valores in Colombia, it would have been quite a different challenge altogether. And that I think that's really interesting. And of course, it's therefore, it's known, your company is known in Canada, and I know of people who have asked me about Chiron Life Sciences as a place to invest, but I know nothing about the business, really, to be able to say. So they will then be listening to this interview. So you have to, you know, obviously, you have to pitch the company to my friends over the podcast now, all right?
Hopefully I'm doing a good job.
Now, part of this, as I understand it, part of this medicinal cannabis is that you have to have your own supply chain and your own cultivations of cannabis, or do you have your own specific suppliers who supply to no one else?
Well, we actually have a mix, Richard. So I told you before, I'm an engineer. So we do have a facility, state-of-the-art facility, but it's not very big. We didn't spend that much money building hundreds of hectares. In fact, we only have, let's say, 1 hectare cultivated. That's 10,000 square feet. The reason why, because we focus a lot on the quality and extraction, but also because in my mind, the way I see the world of cannabis, there's going to be two types of players. The companies that are focused on brands, connections with patients and consumers, and the companies that are going to supply those brands. And, you know, with my partners, we said, you know this company, Alpina, no? the dairy company. How many cows does Alpina have? Right? It has none because that's not their business. But also because I'm an engineer, I know that if you want to subcontract a tunnel, you better learn how to make it yourself.
Yeah.
So we build our own infrastructure. We focus a lot more on the cultivate, on the extraction. We cultivate beautiful flower. It's not a very big facility. And now we are actually sourcing from third players, some of the CBD. And we do that because, again, it's all about timing, capital, efforts. And then you say, well, I already know what I want. I can tell you what I want. You're going to sell this to me. I'm going to make my products under my own, in my own lab. But there are some parts of the supply chain that I don't need to do on my own. And I think that's a strategy that you'll start seeing more and more because capital is getting scarce, right? I'm more focused on investing my capital so that we can develop more patients, right? Mm. Than building another 20 hectares of land in a product that is, you know, I already know how to grow. So that's sort of the mix that we do. In countries, for example, like Europe, we actually outsource everything that we're selling right now. And then we also have the same mix. We will sell from Colombia some of our own product, and then we work with our third-party suppliers for more than 6-7 months to design the product that we want according to the patient needs. And so it also makes us more asset-light, I guess. Yeah. I think the ages of building all this massive infrastructure is done. So you know, we have to be balanced.
It gives you a certain degree of flexibility, and then, of course, the possibility to always, you know, change up. If one of your providers, your third party providers, isn't up to standard, you've got others, and if the harvest of one place is not, you know, what you need, I can understand that. And now, you know, as we mentioned, the stigma around the industry here in Colombia and so on. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and perhaps you're going to have to put me completely straight on this. Some months ago, there was a scandal in the industry. Was it false reporting or a bubble, or I don't know. Some months ago, and I don't even remember which company it was, but it really shook the medicinal marijuana industry in Colombia. And there were people saying, oh, you know, it's all a fraud, it's all a front, it's all this. I mean, how have you responded?
Well, you know, Richard, those type of things are always going to happen in this industry, particularly if you look not only in Colombia, Canada, just, you know, in the United States, lawsuits are now mounting because, you know, there's a lot of these types of allegations for companies. But, you know, when that started to happen, I just referred everybody to what we have been doing the last 3 years.
Yeah,
we're a public company. We don't do any funny business. Hey, you know, we have an excellent board, very transparent. So when those type of things, you have to focus on your own company. Mm-hmm. I can't, you know, because it's hard for me to comment on why, whether those things are true and what the company that is, because I don't know. It's not my business to know if that is true or not. And if I spend one single second of my time thinking about that, I wouldn't be spending it thinking about my business. So I don't really think about those things. But when investors start to ask about that, yes, the first thing that everybody comes into play is, what about Colombia? But, you know, again, go back to the history of the company, how it was founded, all the stories that we share, the numbers, the reality. You know, one time when you're in Colombia, you can come to Bogota, you see, you can go to the clinic. And so everything that we build is for real. Mm-hmm. And so it's a different story. Mm-hmm. I think people would understand. Like today, you know, everybody's talking, for example, today about Nikola, you know, the car company.
Yeah.
Just big car company that was worth more than Ford. And now the CEO just left today because of a scandal. These things always happen.
Yeah.
There's always companies who don't play by the rules. But that's, almost usually the minority. So we shouldn't judge the industry or the company just because whatever scandal. Because, you know, it's not everybody plays by the same rules, I guess. And even if that were true or not, there's a lot of news that nobody knows if they're true or not either, right? Mm. But we just have to keep quiet and keep busy and just focus on my business.
Yeah, I think focus on your own thing. I've remembered the name of the company, but I'm not going to say it just in case that gets me in trouble. So let's get on to the health side of these things. And you've made a lot of reference to the sort of, let's say, the needs of the patients. And I'm sure that the needs of the patients in Europe are different to the needs of the patients in Colombia, or they're dissimilar. I don't know. What kind of products are you making at this point in time that you're for exportation?
So, Richard, we focus on conditions. So basically, we're talking about chronic pain, epilepsy, multiple sclerosis, mental health, anxiety, depression. And these are conditions that every country has in different mixes. I think right now, you know, as you know, we are actually already in the UK through the project called 2021. It's slow to begin with, but it's a very interesting market because, you know, there's 1.5 million users right now of medical cannabis in the UK on the black market, right? So this is all about trying to get that black market into the legal market, because some of that is going to be covered by the government. Mm. But it takes time because people are usually afraid of it. Doctors are skeptical. They don't know what the evidence is. It's the same process with everybody. Every country, we have to learn, educate. And then when we finish that, we relearn and we re-educate. Mm-hmm. And that starts to bring a lot more doctors and more patients aligned into getting into this. We already exported our first product to Scotland. We had our first patient in Scotland about a month ago. And now we are working towards making sure that we can keep sending all the production there. In Colombia, LATAM, there's probably about 60 million people, 60, that have conditions that can be treated with medical cannabis. In our clinic today, for example, we announced a month and a half ago that we had reached our first 1,000 prescription. Today, we are already at almost 3,000. So you see a growth. It took us, we started selling medical cannabis in Colombia the day before the pandemic. So you can, I don't know if that's good luck or not, but certainly if we hadn't gotten that permit, I wouldn't be selling today.
Yeah.
But it took us, let's say, 10 weeks to be able to sell, to get to our first 1,000 prescription. And now it's taking us, let's say, 3 weeks to get to 1,000 prescriptions. Mm. And that just keeps growing. So, we're starting in Peru also very soon. And it's the same process. You educate. Yeah. People don't like it at first. They don't understand it. But the reality is the patients are tired of taking morphine, buprenorphine, OxyContin, all these drugs that make them go crazy or make them numb. And they want to try something else because the current medicine with opioids, it's come to a point in which people don't believe in it anymore. Mm. So there's a very big opportunity for medical cannabis in Colombia and LATAM. I think that's what you're seeing in Europe.
Well, I think you're a definite growth market as we, tail end of this pandemic, well, or before the second wave as we're getting it. I don't know what's happening. But mental health, anxiety, and depression will certainly be on the rise. So therefore you're in the right business. And what you say about OxyContin, well, I was once in an Uber in Miami, and the guy was a doctor by day, Uber driver by night, and I said, is it the reality of what I read in the newspapers here about all of the opioid related deaths? And he said, more. Every time I'm in the ER, you see more than what they are reporting. It is truly, truly a scourge. Of course, it's no longer on the front page because everything is COVID-19 and everything else, but that's not going away. OxyContin and the prescription by unscrupulous pharmaceutical companies, it will continue while there's a benefit for them to do so. So I can understand the advantages of medicinal cannabis and of that nature. Let's come back to a little bit on the ground here in Colombia. And part of one of my fears, and you will know best, because banks obviously at the beginning didn't want to touch you with a 10-foot pole, because you're essentially saying you want to launder money. That's what they probably imagined that you were trying to say in a more polite and educated fashion. But do you, in your industry then, get approached by the illegal growers to try and then, push their product through you to be able to launder or be able to legitimize their product? I mean, have you been approached by the mafias?
No, Richard, no. I haven't been approached by anybody since I started it. I doubt that the industry has been ever approached by the illegal market. And the reason is because to be able, even if somebody wanted to do something like that, it's very difficult because of all the regulatory steps from just registering your seed, to be able to produce. I mean, in Colombia, if you want to produce cannabis, let's call it THC, which would be the highest value, you actually have to get a permit on how many grams you can produce. And whatever excess you have from your, let's call it research grants, you actually have to dispose of it legally with the police. So the way it was structured, and I think still even today, that was very well done in terms that it's so far off. It's like comparing heroin growers with pharmaceutical companies. Well, they do sell opiates. But my point is that it comes from the same plant.
Yeah.
But it's two different types of business. The difference here in cannabis is that cannabis doesn't kill, but in overdose and things like that. But it's way different. I think that's been one of the biggest, you know, things that I've seen. I mean, I used to be in engineering, and I had projects all over Colombia. And I can tell you that, you know, I go to our site almost every 2 weeks. Never have I ever felt any sense of insecurity. Mm-hmm. And we've been doing it for 3 years.
Yeah.
And also because, you know, where we grow, we grow in Tolima, in a part of Tolima that's not very dangerous. A lot of people are growing north of Bogota. That's, you know, there's never been any illegal activities there. So I guess also depends where you grow it. But no, we haven't had that. And I don't think anybody in the industry, at least in the guild, has experienced that, which is a great thing, you know, because that's the last thing I would like to get in touch with, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, but honestly, personal security, if only in that of your let's say, extended family in the business, you have to think of these things. And now I got, when the your let's say, comms office sent me the email saying, would you be interested in interviewing someone from Chiron Life Sciences? And I responded, the press release was about essential health services remaining open during the pandemic. So you have your clinics already open, running in Bogota.
Well, part of the strategy on how to get to B2C, focus on consumers, that is legal in Colombia. I decided that we would be vertically integrated. So we have, yes, we have the cultivation, but we also have our own clinics. We have three clinics in Bogota. We just opened the third one about 3 months ago. When the pandemic hit, you know, because we're in the health services,
yeah,
we were able to remain open.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, you know, challenges of COVID and having, you know, making sure people are okay, right? But we've been managing well through that.
Uh-huh.
But it helps us a lot because that's where most of our patients come from.
Mm-hmm.
And our clinic called Serenia with a Z is where it's located in 106 and 19th in Bogota, in La Calle 106 con 19. And it's been open for the last, you know, 5 months. Of course, we have telemedicine as well and such, but that's how we drive patients to our business. Mm-hmm. So we control all that part, and I guess, you know, all the exceptions allowed us to keep open.
Nice.
Which was really, I guess, fortunate for us, considering that, as I told you, we got the permit to sell the day before the country closed. So, you know, that was quite lucky.
Kept you in business, I think, is what we can say.
Yes.
And now there are, let's say, regular doctors, or I mean, because healthcare is complicated here, and talking about being signed up to, let's say, oh, I don't know, you're in Colmeco, you're in Colsanitas, or in something else, you're in Allianz, and then you've got your EPSs as well, and so on. But do they make reference then to Serenia and say, I think you should be seeing Serenia's doctors for alternative or new products? I mean, do you have a relationship with these big insurers?
So the clinic Serenia that we built is part of the clinics that we acquired about 2 years ago. And those clinics that we acquired actually, they're contracted all by EPS companies. No?
Okay.
The big EPS. So, no, in terms of, we get all the patients, most of the patients that are taking cannabis right now, they come from insurance companies. Mm. They're still not reimbursed, but that's a process.
You know? Yeah.
That's a process of convincing them, showing them the evidence, and we'll get there very soon. And the other half of the patients are actually, that are coming to our clinic, out of those 3,000 prescriptions, half of them are from out-of-pocket people,
mm-hmm,
who are, let's say, desperate and try to look for another alternative.
Yeah.
Because even though sometimes medication is covered, they don't want to keep taking OxyContin. So we have a mix. And now with insurance companies, well, not because there are clients, they've been the clients for the clinic for a long time. All we do is just show them the evidence and show them the testimonials and show them the economic benefits that they will see. And that's a process that will probably take us another couple of months. But once that gets done, then, you know, the goal is to get insurance companies to cover it. And, you know, we've been very vocal about that goal from the beginning.
Mm.
Hopefully next year we'll be able to start doing that. and that will help us, you know, keep taking off. But, you know, half of them, half of the patients still are from, are not covered by insurance, and they still pay for it.
I mean, it sounds, it's all planned out. I mean, you make these statements, and it sounds like a long time, the 3 years that you've been working, and then in a few months you'll get this next step done. But it's so rapid. I mean, in the sense of medicine, you know, obviously the big thing that everyone's talking about now is a vaccine, you know, that we need for the pandemic, and everyone's like, but you have the evidence. After 3 years of testing, I mean, that should be enough
for evidence of any ulterior effects or side effects that occur with patients. I mean, you know better than I do.
Well, you know, the evidence, I mean, up until we started in March of this year, when we actually started selling in Colombia, all the evidence is third party, you know? Mm-hmm. Now we have to start to prove it with our own patients, patients that want to consent to it. And then you have to do it in a way that's actually very scientific method so that insurance companies and doctors start to believe it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I mean, if you even think about it, and the way I look at this, I mean, opiate business has been in business for more than 100 years, since before World War I, right? And we are only in the first 5 years of cannabis.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you think about that and you think about the pharmaceutical industry and you think about the future, we're still in very, very, very early stages in the world. Maybe the United States a little bit faster. Maybe Canada has gone a little faster, but if you want an industry that's going to be disruptive, because in the end, all of us are going to experience pain. Mm-hmm. All of us are going to go through mental health issues. Mm-hmm. All of us are going to grow old. And all of us don't want to be hooked on opiates when we are 80. Mm-hmm. No. So when that happens, I'm going to think, well, cannabis is going to keep evolving. So we are very early stages, and I think we have a lot of time to make this work. Of course, you know, time is not a matter of capital and such. So you always worry about that, but you know, this industry is taking off, and you see the sales in Canada, the sales in the US, and mm-hmm. you have to start to understand Germany, and it's a real business. It's just that it's right now overcrowded. There's too many opportunities to invest, I guess. But if you forget about the capital market side of it, the number of patients that we see every day in the clinic that are keeping to want to get medication, you start thinking what that looks like in 5 years. It's going to be a very big business.
Excellent. Well, this is a nice upbeat interview this week for the podcast. Unfortunately, you know, with current events in Colombia as they are, things have been a little bit, you know, less than positive for my listeners. But they always want the updates of what's happening here, and we talk about the bigger picture things through Colombia as a lens for you know what's going on elsewhere and so on. And so let me take this moment to say thank you so much to Alvaro Torres, who is the CEO and co-founder of Chiron Life Sciences. And if you're in Bogota and you're in need of you know, some alternative medicine, well, which is becoming mainstream in my mind, but for anxiety, depression, mental health, painkillers. Well, Zerenia, that's right, Zerenia with a Z.
Zerenia, with a C, yes.
Okay.
ClinicaZerenia.com.
Okay, well, there you have it. So thank you again, Alvaro, for your time and for sharing your story of the business with us.
Thank you, Richard. And if I may, you know, in that point that you made, every time my son, who's 11, and he listens to me talking about Colombia before, when I was his age, he always asks me what country I lived on. So my point is that when I was his age, we're in the middle of drug cartel wars, people and bombings. And, you know, I cannot say that things are not getting better. So we always have to keep a positive outlook because there's not much alternative. We always have to look at a positive way.
There you go. Thank you again. Thank you for that final point. And so we'll close the interview now here with Alvaro Torres, CEO and co-founder of Chiron Life Sciences. It's a great thank you. I know he's incredibly busy and he's taken some time
out
of his day. Thank you again. And we're signing off. This has been Colombia Calling, episode 344. Please stay tuned for next week and we'll have more interesting people talking about something Colombia related. And bye-bye.
la playa.